Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show tonight. A great friend of mine and a killer guitar player that's been on several times, both as a guest on the show and also as a guest host. Steve Pfister's here. And we're going to get a sneak preview of an upcoming album that he's doing. And he really, it's a great album. It's taking, he's going in a really interesting direction. It's called Electroacoustic, and it pretty much describes what he's going to do. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. Also joining me is Lori Reamer that put us together, and that's how we met originally. So, Lori, it's great to have you here. But what I wanted to mention real quick is there's a gig coming up. I want to make sure that we get that in there, because once I start talking about the album, I know I'm going to just fly. The time's going to fly and stuff. So both of you guys, welcome. But let's talk about that. When is that gig coming up for Electroacoustic?
It is June 17th at the Eastbot Lounge in beautiful downtown Studio City, California.
Very cool. Which
is, it's actually upstairs from Vitello's Italian restaurant.
Uh-huh.
And then there's actually the CD release, the official CD release. The CD's going to be released in August, but the CD release concert will take place at Alva's on September 3rd.
Oh, okay. So we're actually...
Two shows.
Yeah. So we're getting a really good sneak peek of what's coming up. And I'm telling you guys, it's a great album.
Thanks.
So first of all, I'm going to start out. I'm going to play a clip from this, and we're going to talk about this. It's called Bad is as Good as It Gets. And it's a... Well, I'm just going to play it, and then... The questions will begin. Here
All
we
right,
go.
Let it roll.
Thank you.
Lord have mercy, rock and roll is going to take place right up in here tonight.
Now, it's interesting, and I want everybody, you got to go back and listen to the first interview I had with Steve, because the clips I played there, there's a this tone that you're getting out of here is a different tone than I would normally associate with you.
Right, right.
And it's a great sound. It's a you're getting a, like a more of a hollow type of sound out of there. What were you using, and guitar amps, whatever?
You know, back on that session, and that was kind of the whole genesis of the whole idea of the electroacoustic band. We used upright bass provided by Philip Brino, just beautifully played. Sandra Feliciano played Trap Kid on that. And guitar-wise, that was one of the few songs here on the record that I played. I played a Les Paul with the for all the technical aspect. The bare knuckles pickups, the Peter Green out of phase kind of sound. I played it through a Marshall and just used a lot of fingers, a lot of pick, and I was hitting the neck pickup and the right on the fly. That kind of solo you can hear halfway through, you know, it gets sharper, you know, we're just hitting the selector live. And come to think of it, that little dobro bit at the end, we were talking about it before the show. That was the dobro. That wasn't an electric guitar. That was just it was just mic'd, and we really just compressed the daylights out of it, and it really gave it that kind of sustaining kind of during the
It has the sustain, but also it has a little bit of what I call bloom, and has a little dirt to it. Is that was just pushing the mic, or was it direct? Because you have a pickup on there, right?
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember how we recorded that particular thing. I think I did a combination mic and pickup.
Okay.
And it gave us just that little bit of extra, you know, you line it up and make sure it's in phase and let it rip. I think I just got lucky on that one.
Because there's a lot of slide work on this, so I want to let you guys know there's a lot, and it's really good. But that thing, it just sounded like you were cranking through an amp. It had a little dirt to it. That's pretty good, that guitar. I love it. It's an acoustic guitar that distorts all by itself.
Don't
that's
you love it?
That's just great. That's real rock and roll there.
Now you're talking.
But anyway, it's a great song, and it's again, different type of tone, different type of, and I'm going to play another clip in a little bit that's even takes us even, because you're really pushing boundaries and going exploring other areas, which I think is really very, very cool, because it shows another aspect to your playing that I think is really important. But let's talk real quick about how this concept, the electroacoustic concept, came out. Was it an album thing that you were thinking about initially, or was it a gig thing, a band thing that you were doing, and then it became an album thing?
You know, this thing, what we would always do is a slight acoustic segment to the shows. We would always play, I bust out the dobro, and depending on the show and whatever, we'd even do this in Europe, there'd be a little segment in the show, we just do like a little semi-unplugged segment, and you know, it's been one of my bucket list things to do, is to do an acoustic record, a complete record. And, you know, it just kind of just went from there. It went from live. We would be playing this kind of raucous, really aggressive rock and roll. And then we just bust it right down and try not to be too cliche with it and just really make the song speak. And that's how the whole thing kind of started. And finally, I got around to doing a whole batch of tunes. And it's been kind of like the reinvention. You know, here we are in the modern world. You know, it used to be you had to reinvent yourself every 5 years. Well, now it's like every 5 months.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That time's moving fast. So it was time to make this record, and it was just I had a blast making it. It was therapeutic. It was using a different... It's like wearing a different suit of clothes. You feel like a different person. And yet it all just came out. It just flowed really nice. It's been a real, real fun record to make.
Well, I'm going to play some more clips in a second, but what I wanted to ask you is adapting this music to live. Was it difficult? I mean, what are you using in the live show now? How do you perform it? I know you're using the dobro, but acoustic guitar, using How do you? Because a lot of the stuff on here, you've layered guitars. I'm like, how is he going to do this line? Because there's like three parts in here, and they're pretty complex.
You know, that was the thing. When we started, right in the middle of doing this record, I was at the Baked Potato one night, and Justin comes up to me, and he goes, you got any new songs? Mm-hmm. I go, I got a whole batch of them. He goes, why don't you come in and play them? So right in the middle of this whole thing, we decided to do a gig, which probably isn't the smartest thing when you're, you know, break the flow on a record. Mm-hmm. But it made me focus in on exactly what I needed to do to get the message of these songs across. And with primarily playing acoustic guitar, I'm asking a lot out of the acoustic guitar. The show goes from a dadgad tuning to a drop D tuning, mm-hmm. to, open E tuning on the dobro, and then we'll capo it up to E. So there's a bunch of different things, but and a lot of single note stuff, a lot mm-hmm. of like. Yet I'd still need to get a. So I was kind of asking a lot out of my primary instrument to be able to mm-hmm. focus and yet handle a capo, and you know I wrestled with string gauge. I did a bunch of things, so it was really great to explore that aspect of how I wanted to do it. But what I found, to make a long story even longer, is my association with Godin and Siegel, mm-hmm. and the artist model guitar, which is it's a big body guitar. It's a huge sound. I mean, like if you're doing a drop D, you can get a it's almost piano-esque, mm-hmm. you know. And even with you know, we found using the acoustic bass a lot of times. This guitar sounded so huge in the track. We'd have to, you know, really evaluate the miking, and just to have everything fit in just right. But one primary guitar did probably 85% of the work. It worked like a charm.
And that's that the Siegel Artist.
Yes.
And that's rosewood back in size, I think, and spruce. I'm looking at it right now. This, ebony board.
Right.
And then does that have the pickup in it, the LR bags?
This does. It has the, you know, the ones with the controls in the sound hole.
Right. Okay, so it's an electroacoustic. This thing sounds great. Let me play a clip. Excuse me, I'm moving around trying to take pictures, and then we're going to talk about he's done something interesting that just caught my eye and how he strings that guitar. We'll tell about that in a minute. But I'm going to play this clip is called Loving Cup, and it kind of shows that sustain, and this guitar rings really well, and it just the sustain of it, and when he's playing lead on it and stuff, this kind of demonstrates that. We'll talk a little bit about that and how you mic this. I'm curious how this was recorded.
Cool.
This is Loving Cup. Let me play that, and this is all acoustic. That tone of that guitar is just great, and the sustain that you're getting out of that instrument, because you're doing some interesting runs on there, and the notes ring true. How did you record that? That's the lead is the Godin, right?
Yeah, and the basic track as well. The whole thing is one guitar. Obviously, I overdubbed a solo. But I did your basic two-mic technique. I used an AT, 40-50, on the around the 12th fret, about 8 inches back, mm-hmm. and I used a groove tube, like an overhead condenser, for the bridge. Mm-hmm. I got them in phase, and just like Jim West says. You know, you put the headphones on and just, you know, move yourself around till you find that sweet spot. And that's what I did. We just kind of let it rip.
Okay.
Nothing too fancy. A Summit preamp, two channels of that, and just made sure everything was in phase and let it go. The whole idea was to, you know, really not overproduce the guitars at all. Just really keep it absolutely as organic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but still get the performance, you know, and because that track, we did do the basic live.
Now, when you were recording that guitar, because the guitar just sustains forever, did you have to use compression, or that's actually the guitar just sustaining?
That's the guitar itself. I experimented a whole ton with string gauge, and boy, you know, I'm pretty crazy when it comes to string changing. You know, I love crisp sound. I love I love new strings. You know, basically that's what my ear acclimates to, and that, you know, you get an hour or two in on any set, and they're done. You know, they're pretty much done.
Yeah.
I was lucky that I had to make sure that I just made sure that the strings were new and fresh, and just cut it and make sure your fingers are, your calluses are nice and hard.
Mm-hmm.
I experimented a whole bunch with picks. Talk about your tone control.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't used a Fender medium pick in probably 20 years.
You know, wow.
I wound up using that on a lot of the solos. And funny, you know, I live up in Laurel Canyon, and I was walking around. There's one like overview kind of vista kind of thing, and I walk there all the time. And I was talking on the phone, and I'm looking down. There's a beautiful view, and I'm digging my foot. I'm just, you know, nervously in the whatever. I found an original pick. a Fender, you know, with the old logo on it, the whole thing. Like, they don't make those things anymore, like that anymore. So I said, oh, man, this is an omen. This is right before these sessions. So I picked it up, cleaned it off, put it in my pocket, and I wound up using it for the majority of the solos. And, you know, because we all get crazy about the material of our picks, and particularly when it comes to acoustic instruments, it makes such a difference. Your tone control is your right hand. And come to think of it, I don't know why I totally forgot about that, but that was the pick, you know, the pick of destiny.
There are no coincidences.
There you go.
No, I like the Fender Medium is one of the
remember
those? Yeah, I still have some. Actually, there was one company I think that made a lot of those. I actually have Rickenbacker make mediums.
Lord have mercy.
Those are old. Box of those in my house. I'm like, oh man, and it's the same. It's the same pick. It's the same.
They made it of some different material. Now I'm using, you know, I use these Dunlop Tortex, you know, real heavy duty ones, you know, and I find I used like a 1.21, and that pretty much serves me for everything. But for this record, just trying to really get that sustain, and you think it would be totally the opposite, but the lighter the pick, the fatter the tone, at least in my case.
And really?
Yeah, it worked out really nice, just touch wise, and like I said, getting.
So you normally use a heavier pick?
Real heavy.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I let my wrist kind of be the compressor.
Because I found that with a lighter pick, you get more overtones because you're not, and then when you with a heavier pick, you're getting the fundamental because you're knocking that string harder.
That's the whole thing. It made me, my whole dynamic approach really, because there's no automation on the record at all either. Everything is pretty much, you know, recorded. You know, there's some clip volume. You know, you can do a couple things in Pro Tools, but nothing was radically changed.
So you're basically performing.
Exactly.
You're playing every part and you can hear it. Because it's very musical.
Thank you.
It's interesting, too, that you, because like in that lead that you played in Loving Cup, you dig in and you get that growl out of it.
Right.
And you do like turnarounds and stuff. And I'm going to play another clip that shows arpeggios. And you're doing some other stuff that normally you would hear in electric. And I'm like, dang, how did he, that's risky. And he got it. He got it. You can hear all the notes in it. I mean, it's not easier. You know, when you have a lot of sustain on your guitar, a lot of gain, you could do a lot of you get a little lazier. But I mean, he does this on the acoustic and it's pretty amazing. But before I do that, I want to talk about your strings there. Because you do it, you have an unusual thing set up on this guitar.
Well, I recently had I'm a Rotosound for my electric guitars, you know, and they've been really consistent, and I've never really had a bad string with them. For they're really not noted for their guitar strings. The electric guitar works great for me, and I've had no reason to change. But I was having some issue with the acoustic guitar, and anyway, make a long story. Here we go. black diamond strings. And I started using them. Remember they used to be in your dad's guitar case, black diamond strings, you know? So I thought, well, this is company. A friend of mine turned me on, and they've been around for many years. They're a small company based in Florida. And I started using their acoustic strings, and particularly their coated strings. Now, coated strings are, you know, it's kind of a slippery slope for me with the coated strings because I like those fresh, you know, mm-hmm. really, really snappy sound. And with the coated strings, what do they call it? The Prozac of electric guitar strings. No highs, no lows.
Yeah.
But they're consistent. Mm-hmm. Okay? So there you go. Okay, and the audience is roaring. They're laughing here. Okay, good. But, okay, not that I'd have any experience with that, mind you. Okay, but the strings are very, I found them to be very, very consistent. And I also found that for slide guitar, I could use a lighter gauge and still get the tone, yet they immediately return to pitch. They did a lot of things that other strings did not do. And so anyway, for a lot of the solos, what I wound up doing is making like a hybrid set. Like I'd take a coated 14 mm-hmm. and put it in place of the 16 for the B string so I could do some more of the bends and not compromise the tone too much. And yet it worked in the studio, and it has worked on the live shows as well. Mm-hmm. So strings are kind of important. You know, you can work up to a heavier gauge, but you know, I don't like to fight the guitar.
What strings are you using for the main set? And then you're using on the B string, you're using a black diamond, right?
Correct.
So what's the other set?
What I wound up using for the majority of the record was just a plain old stock set of Martin phosphor bronze 12s. Mm-hmm. Just plain old light. I think they call it I don't think it's quite a medium gauge.
The Marquee? Are they the Marquee?
They're not Marquees. They're not even that fancy. They're just
bronze 12s.
Yeah, 12 to 54. And it holds the drop D pretty good. Mm-hmm. No problem with that. You know, comes back to pitch. And they last pretty good. But on the Dobro and my electric slide guitars, black diamond all the way.
Yeah, I remember you had told me that you were, when you just got some of the black diamond on, I know you were telling me about that before. I forgot, I think maybe at the gun club or something.
Yeah.
And you were talking about it on the Dobro. You were real excited about it.
It's like I could use, I was playing really, really heavy strings, like on one of my electric slide guitars, you know. I thought I used, you know, you really jack the action up. I found with the black diamond I could go down to, instead of a 13 on top, mm-hmm. which it's pretty manly, let's face it, in an open E tuning, and I could drop down to an 11 set, 11 to 46. Then my hands weren't as fatigued. I played easier. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, you know, life is short. Why make it hard? You know, all we need is the tone, right?
No, that's true. Yeah. And then if you need to go on there and bend and play regular, you're there.
You can do
It's easier.
Yeah. And you can do I could do all the fretting behind the slide. A lot of stuff that was really, particularly when you're standing up, you know, you play a lot of, make some minor chords, there's some things behind the slide. It's a little challenging with the heavier strings, but it's all a compromise, you know, how much you want to go one direction, you know, to get the tonality that you want for the particular song.
Well, you're getting a killer sound on here.
Cool.
All right, I'm going to play this. This is another clip. It's called One Way Ticket, and you'll hear when he does the lead on here, you're going to hear the arpeggios, the chord arpeggios, which are really cool. And then also to take a listen to the other guitar that's playing, because he's riffing and he's comping and the chords that he's playing. First of all, that just rings all the notes in that. Those chords are just crystal clear. You can hear all the notes in there. And just the sound of that. And then we'll talk more, and maybe you can show us a little bit what you were doing.
Cool.
But this is called One Way Ticket. Take a listen.
I got you a one way ticket. One way ticket on a train. I got you a one way ticket. One way ticket in your name. Just the same. Come on, get on.
liable to cut me in the middle of the night. But you know I love her. I'm loving her just the same.
So there you hear a little bit of that comping where you're right. playing... you're doing those little fills, but let's talk a little bit about. I mean, the guitar, the main guitar that's playing there, the main rhythm guitar that's doing the comp. That's the Godin.
That's the Godin. Yes, the Seagull. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now show us a little bit of what you were doing there, because I'm just amazed how you get, especially when you did those arpeggios.
So let's see. Geez, I hardly remember it. But then there was the arpeggio I think we were talking about. So it's what did I do there? Yeah. Then. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
But that particular sequence, that solo, that was on, I borrowed a Martin guitar from my dear friend up in the canyon. It's a D35. It was mm-hmm. 1961 from my friend Debbie. She let me borrow this guitar, and this thing, it really spoke on some of the tracks where I wanted that particular difference. And it just did. I didn't have to EQ it. I didn't have to do anything to it.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. The two guitars blend really well together. I mean, it's almost transparent.
It was really lucky. It was lucky that two things, you know, because I don't have a ton of acoustic instruments, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, I borrowed my friend's J45. I borrowed a bunch of different things, and I saw what really complemented, you know, the basic sound of the whole record, which would have been this instrument, you know. You know, what can I get to complement that? Because when we cut the tracks, we did the basics, we did them live. So the majority of the things are performances. And incidentally, I'd like to give a shout-out to my percussion player and co-producer, Sandro Feliciano, has done a great job. He's been with me helping out on this. And Philip Bino mm-hmm. on the upright, who's playing with that guitar player. You know, you ever hear that guy, Steve Vai?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you know, so now that I've dropped that name, boom. But that's why he, you know, he's not with us tonight and stuff like that. They're out in Europe somewhere. But yeah. Sorry,
no, but
I can't take you.
But now the Seagull Artist was what you used to do the comping in there.
Right. The whole thing.
That's interesting. Now, those chords, show us a little bit of that, because it was really interesting. And again, that's not typically what I've seen from your other albums. That's a whole other aspect of you, and it's kind of cool. That's an interesting thing. I mean, to do that type of comping, you can tell that your ear, you've been different places,
you know,
besides rock.
Something, yeah, definitely. I used a lot of adult chords. Okay, you know, let's face it, let's call
adult
it. You know,
chords.
So. You know, just 13ths and just whatever kind of felt kind of. We wanted to give this song a very, very, very up, almost swing, kind of a swing kind of
mm-hmm.
feel.
Mm-hmm.
That was it, and it just lent itself to that kind of playing. You know.
Well, when you did the basic track for that, which was the guitar part that you did with the section?
What you hear on that was basically it. It was a.
So that comping with the that riff.
That was
one guitar.
All one track.
And then the lead was the second.
Was the overdub, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And that's a pretty full sound that you're doing there. You're doing a lot of stuff there.
Well, you know, we that was the thing, just to trying to keep it sparse as possible, and make every single instrument,
mm-hmm.
even every various parts of the percussion kit, because we decided we weren't going to use a conventional trap kit. It was either going to be cajon, you know, congas, lots of room mic. I really figured out what it was going to be. You know, the little sonics were going to be the mm-hmm. colors, some of the percussion pieces. Didn't want a conventional trap kit at all. And I tell you, coming into it, it was a little daunting. You know, I knew I had the songs that I wanted to do and the concept, But the rest of it was actually doing it and making it all just speak and have its own voice. And yeah, with less effort, it came out pretty big sounding.
So going into it, you had your rhythm tracks and your basic setup of the song, but you did that first, and then that kind of determined what you were going to do next.
Exactly.
As opposed to going in with a complete arrangement, I knew I'm gonna put this, this, and this. It kind of evolved, right?
Exactly. And the song, I think we're probably going to play it later on, the one called The Sunrise. It's like we had a little joke saying, well, you got to Jimmy Page this one. You got to really flesh it out and make something different with it. Santa and I would be going back and forth, figuring out different things. And I tried a bunch of different ideas, and, you know, that's what we came up with. So it was just kind of fun.
Well, let's might as well play that now. That's one of my favorite pieces because you really go in a whole different area. I mean, you just, like, go take a quick left and you are left and you're over in this area of guitar playing that's really interesting. And I edited the clip. It's a longer song, but it's really interesting what he does. And there's acoustic guitars, and then he has these, like, what I call, it's like little tinkly things that are going on in an electric guitar. And then he'll explain what I call the weirdness.
Cool.
So let me play that. It's an edited abbreviation of this great song, because it's a pretty lengthy song, but take a listen and you'll see. And again, he's pushing the bar, he's going into other areas, and I think that's always good to kind of just push yourself and explore somewhere you've never been before, because this is killer stuff. Thanks. This is The Sunrise. Wild stuff in there, and you know, it's like it's prog, the first prog song I've ever heard without any keyboards in it, because that's all guitars that he's doing, all the slide stuff, all these really cool things that he's doing in there. Let's talk a little bit about that. The main acoustic guitar is the Godin, the Seagull.
Right. That's the primary. The basis of the track was the Seagull. And there's a slide thing over what would be, I guess, the chorus. And that's just a straight into the console electric guitar. And I just tuned it to, I believe it was open A. Mm-hmm. And just found the passage and just did it. And we just treated it a certain way and gave it that sort of ethereal sort of echo. And it just really, really fit the track. Mm-hmm. But the funnest part was I needed a sitar for the end. Mm-hmm. Where the hell am I going to get a sitar? You know. So I took my trusty old Fender Stratocaster, mm-hmm. and I tuned it down a whole step. And so the bridge was floating already, so it was really floating. And I capoed to second fret, mm-hmm. and then I could get all those and still use the tremolo. Mm-hmm. And that was another really right into the computer kind of a sound. Mm-hmm. And I never use amp modelers or anything like that, and I don't really think I did with this. I just used some compression and some delay and stuff like that. But we got that very sitar-esque sort of sound, and it just kind of fit.
So all that warbling is the whammy bar.
That's the whammy, yeah. Oh, that's wow. all done like
kind I thought of that was electronic.
Real, that was that's it, that. But in order to get that, you know, to make it sound sitar-esque, I had to really detune the strings and then capo up mm-hmm. to get a lot of the open notes and still use the tremolo and really shake the strings. Yet,
yeah, you're
keep
yeah.
it in tune. You know?
Yeah, and no, and it so, held. It held pretty well. Yeah. What was the in the second part that I was playing where you're doing like those kind of tinkly little chord arpeggiated thing? How did you do that?
That's just a different. It was the which is the basis of it. Just different inversions of that, and I did some tap echo. So what you're really hearing is just ging, 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 right, left, right, left, right, left. And it's
so it's one fit. Guitar.
It's
but
one
the
guitar. Echo. It was a high-strung guitar.
It
That's
was?
Why
okay.
Sounds, okay, thanks for reminding me. Jeez, I should know what's on my own damn record. But it was a high-strung, and I found these really crazy little small inversions over that chord sequence. And with the right kind of ping-ponging echo, and that was just the right part. It was just one part. It was actually kind of a simple part, but boy, it was the
no.
It was
I mean,
the right
it
one.
Just it stands yeah. out. I mean, it's like really cool. I mean,
that's the high strung. Okay. Thanks for reminding me.
And which yeah. was that electric?
Yeah, back in the day, I have this Bernie Rico, may he rest in peace, mm-hmm. made me this beautiful double neck, custom made 24 fret. Crazy thing, I used it on all the Lita Ford tours. But these days, I keep the 12-string neck as a 12-string, an electric 12-string. Mm-hmm. And that I use it on a lot of records and a lot of sessions. But I keep the bottom neck as a high strung. And whenever I need some color, you know, some little crazy little things, I pull that guitar out, and it works. And the thing weighs about 19 pounds. But it's worth it.
Oh, wow. No, yeah. I mean, the tone of that yeah. thing is just great. And it adds a whole... Yeah, it's again. There's a lot of stuff going on, and again, I abbreviated it. I cut the sections into to make a piece that we can talk about within 2 minutes. But there's a lot more development of all of each of the pieces. But it reminded me a lot of stuff that I had heard. Well, actually, it reminded me more of a prog thing. But there was some there was some kind of, I don't know if it was an influence, but there was some stuff. If you remember Joe Walsh's Barnstorm, he was doing a lot of those type of layered and lower guitars
yes.
that did that sound, and you get that sound really well. That low note, boom. I mean, it's just like
there's nothing like a
hits you right in the chest.
Love it. I love a detuned guitar, and of course, it makes the bass player's life hell. But you know, we want to. Keep the frequencies, you know. It's all about guitar, right?
Yeah, you that's know? What, really what it is. You know? Now, I'm going to play a clip that shows some more of your slide, and I want you to pull out the slide guitar because we want to talk about that. We're almost out of time. It's going fast.
It goes fast.
This clip, it's a shuffle, and there's slide all over this stuff, and then there's some kind of little tinkly stuff you're doing on the acoustic, and I love that stuff.
All right.
And this is called In a Past Life. So let me play the clip while he's grabbing the guitar.
Living way above the ground. I'm wishing you some better luck next time around.
Now that's something. Well, again, that's the Dobro.
Yes.
And that's the one that you have here today.
Yes.
The Johnson.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. It's an imported guitar. You know. And I'll tell you what. I bought it probably maybe 10 years ago, and we did all these mods to it just to kind of make it you know, usable in a live situation. We found we were talking about it early before the show. What kind of pickup this is? It's a Johnny Smith jazz pickup, and not just because the Johnny Smith Seymour Duncan, which Seymour's been great to me all these years, but this particular pickup fit. You know, it wasn't particularly picked for its outstanding tonal quality. However, it was a happy accident. It worked great. So that comes to a volume knob right here. And then underneath, I have a Barkus Berry in the cone, so I can mix, you know, the so I can get the snap of the Dobro and still bring in the amp sound. So it's a little bit of a hybrid. But what happens is the platform is that of an acoustic guitar, a bell brass, you know.
Yeah, it's a heavy guitar. It's a brass shell,
a brass
body,
right? With all this. So I can still get the.
And that's those black diamond strings.
And for the here, hear me clanking with the slide all over the place. It's the black diamond coated strings, and they really hold up. They hold the pitch. They hold the tuning. The whole bit. Been really happy with them.
No, it just—it's an interesting sound. And that now, when you were on that song, was that acoustic or were you both acoustic and the pickup? Did you
totally acoustic? Totally acoustic. Mic'd it up. Put a mic here. Did the same sort of miking scheme that I did for all the basic tracks. Did the same thing with the Dobro, and only maybe moved back a little bit and used the groove tube mic for the biscuit, for the cone, so I could really kind of mix the snap and you know, we had to watch out for the phasing, you know, so that one thing wouldn't. But once I got it in phase and, you know, got my chair to not squeak. Don't you hate that? You know, you got a good take and you get a real squeak.
Yeah, I do that all the time here.
Here, you see what's stupid right now? Yeah.
It's the little things that we get fascinated with.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know. Now, what it on that track, too, okay, what do you do? Was that the Godan Seagull doing the acoustic guitar?
Yeah, the
under. You're doing, like, these really high chord things.
There was just a little bit of a, the primary guitar is. That's the primary sound. So everything else was just, you know, kind of incidental little rhythm things.
Okay.
That I put on, and that would have been.
Now there's only is there two rhythm two acoustic guitar parts in the Dobro, or is it just one?
It's one. The Dobro is the primary guitar, and then the solo is the Dobro as well.
Okay, but I mean the acoustic guitars. There's one acoustic guitar,
one acoustic.
Doing all those little things in the background.
Correct.
Because it's a great counterpoint. The interplay between the two guitars is really, really
cool.
I mean, interesting. And I think that's important. It fits really well, and it's interesting using the Godan, which has that real sparkly type of high end sound, and it blends really well with the Dobro.
You know, it's a big sound too. That's
yes,
the thing.
Yes.
It's a big sound, particularly with the fresh strings, and you know, just really sitting in the right spot to make the guitar speak. And I experimented a little bit. I really figured it out. I tried to see what was going to be best. And, you know, that's kind of the thing about, like, even playing in a trio. A lot of people say, well, you know, it's hard to play in a trio. You know, I like the space. I like the openness of it, that you have to play the right part in the right spot. Ideally, you know, we try. That's what we strive for. But you want to get, you know, you're not clouded with, and I love keyboards, don't get me wrong, but when everybody's just kind of playing very melodic and you have your own sonic space, there you go. The space can be an instrument as well.
Right. Well, that's the thing. There's no keyboards on this album, and it's very full. And, I mean, there's a lot of resonance in it. Using the different guitars that you're playing and stuff, it does fill the room, so to speak. And it's hard to explain it, but I know, like, in orchestration, there's certain things, if you play certain, you voice certain instruments, it'll actually sound like there's something else, something,
exactly.
Something's happening in there, and you kind of do that in this thing, because it's very, it's a very full, lush sound, even though you're not really, you know, it's not 24, 48 tracks of layers.
Right and left guitar and all the, you know, yeah, we've
all made pretty, that. Yeah. It's pretty interesting. You know. But do you get, now, when you play that live, does it, are you able to get that magic like that? Is that hard to do live? Because, again, it's as a trio.
That was a whole nother process. And that's where I found that, you know, particularly, how was I going to make one guitar my primary, you know,
right.
I used three different instruments on the acoustic gig. You know, the dobro, the seagull, and then I use an electric slide guitar for F and G tuning, and I just capo up. And how do you make all these radically different frequencies sound right with a hybrid percussion kit? You know, it's Sanders using all sorts of crazy stuff. And we just had to be very careful with the sonics on each song and really watch the dynamics because, hell, I'm a rock guitar player. You know, I'll get out of control. Boom, like that. Boom. It'll go big.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just do things a little bit differently and really use the right hand, just make sure that the tone was just really clean and that the rhythms were really honest, on point.
Yeah.
So really... We tried to be very careful with the frequencies, and I know there's going to be some room for improvement in the live show, but that's a bit of a learning curve, and that's what's been so much fun about doing this thing, is that now we're just kind of emulating what has already been created,
right?
And just to make it live.
Well, I think it's a challenge to, especially in a trio format,
right,
to use a trio with acoustic guitar or dobro or whatever. I mean, that's not. That's a whole, because, you know, I mean, yes, you're singing, so that's part of it too. But I mean, it's, that's a lot to fill out. And it's, you know, that guitar has to do a lot more.
Because when you go from chords to single notes, you know, you don't want the whole thing to just drop out.
Right.
You know, we need to, you know, that's where the dynamics are really important. And a lot of times it's not louder and louder, it's louder and softer. And it is much more musical and seems to translate a whole lot better.
The acoustic guitar makes you more honest because you can't hide behind the sustain and the gain.
Absolutely.
And I've noticed in your playing on here, besides the fact that you're going into different styles, but also the way you play, your dynamics are a little more. There's more dynamics.
Yeah.
You'll get subtle, then you'll rip through a quick part, and then you'll come back, and then you'll dig in and get a nice grit to the guitar and come back, and then at the same time it's all sustaining really nice. That's not, you know, that's technique more than it is, you know.
You know, it's a funny thing about that. It's like the things I'm playing, by and largely, a lot of the same type of thing on an acoustic guitar that I would on an electric, only, you know, technique wise well, obviously a lot of the notes are kind of the same, you know, but people don't go screaming for the exits because you're playing too loud to get your point across. It's a whole other thing. And exploring this kind of thing, I can literally get away with murder.
Well, it's interesting. You're pulling off all this stuff. And it's like he's going for that riff, and I can hear it. And it's like, is he going to make it?
He's
and
winding he, and up. He,
and he's
look
like,
out.
He just did that turnaround. And it's like, wow,
how's
that's
he gonna
cool.
Get back?
And he didn't pick it. He just hammered it. And you know, it's like, that's pretty amazing.
I appreciate that. But the thing about it is it's the, you know, the strings and just basically, you know, time and technique and just practice, know your part. You know, beginnings and endings are really important to me in a solo.
Yeah.
How you enter and how you exit.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool because you got to get back to the vocal, you got to get back to the verse. You could dynamically get it, it has to go a certain way.
Yeah.
You know?
We're out of time. I knew that was going to fly. I just want to mention again that the gig at the East Spot Lounge is the June 17th, right?
Yes.
And, oops, let me get. You're far from the mic. I thought this was off.
That was a yes.
Yes, okay.
Bring the kids.
And the name of this album is going to be Electroacoustic. Is that the title?
You know, it's just Steve
well, we don't Fister, know
electric, Electroacoustic Band. You know, it's just this bucket list project that I'm just really happy and proud of.
Well, I really appreciate you letting us hear this. I mean, this is some great stuff, and you're really going in this a lot of new territory. And I think it's going to be exciting to see where you go next from this, too.
I appreciate
obviously,
it so much, Jeff. Thanks.
As you're evolving and taking this into a live environment, it's definitely going to it's going somewhere. It's going to go even further, and I think that's the exciting part. Everybody, do you want to play something out, or do you want me to play something? I have a clip of Speakeasy. But
Hear that Speakeasy.
That'd okay,
be awesome.
So I'm going to play that. And real quick, that guitar, the lead on there, there's a lead that I'm going to be playing in there. That's it has that kind of hollow out of phase sound. Was that the Les Paul or was that the Godin?
I have an ancient 345.
With
a Veritone on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did, nobody ever uses the Veritone anymore. But I just found that real honky sort of nasally sound, almost Peter Green-esque.
Okay.
And it just worked for the song. So that's
okay,
what it is.
So I'm going to play that. This is called the Speakeasy, and you'll hear that. Thank you again, Steve. I can't thank you enough for being
on
the show.
Check out the Facebook page also. We've got an exclusive Facebook page now that's the
for the band.
Steve Pfister Electroacoustic Band.
Okay.
Yeah. Like us.
Yeah, like it. They like
yes.
it. And Jeff, thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. And of course, you expect to be on as a guest host besides as a you're going to be on both sides of the
interview.
I'm going to be the guest host. I love it.
Everybody have a great night, and we'll
see
you.
Happy Memorial Day.
Yes, happy Memorial Day. And this is the Speakeasy.